Hey, welcome to another one here. It's Bobby, and I tell you what happened before we roll back the Dave Barnes Bobbycast. That happened just a couple days ago when you ever hear this. But I really like his new album. And sometimes, I'd say most of the time now, people come to us and say, hey, can we get on the podcast? And we go, cool, yeah. And sometimes we have to schedule them out now. But with Dave, I just said, hey, I love this album. Is there any way we can get Dave Barnes to come in? And he agreed to. And so for me, it was really cool. And you hear me geeking out a bit in this. So, yeah, this is Dave Barnes. And thanks to LifeLock, who sponsored it. We do have David Lee Murphy coming up. So that one's going to be cool. We haven't recorded that one yet. But David Lee Murphy, obviously, Dust on the Bottle. And then he has a new song, too. And he's just written tons of songs as well. But I enjoyed this one here with Dave Barnes. And I hope you like it. And tell your friends about the Bobbycast if they like songwriting or if they like these artists. You know, we get to spend a lot of time. So from my house, here we go. Episode 105 with musician, songwriter, real fun guy, comedian, Dave Barnes, everybody.
All right, Dave Barnes, ready?
This is the greatest intro music of all time, by the way.
I don't even know. And I think we addressed this one.
It's the Bobby.
It's some sort of old game show.
It's the Bobby Barnes, it's the Bobby.
Yeah.
The Bobby Barnes. You can just, it's all there.
It's the podcast. There it
is. Yeah. Bobby Barnes, it's the Bobby.
Yeah, it's all there. It's ready. You good?
I'm great.
First of all, I was wondering if I should wear pants.
That's fair.
And this is what I was thinking about before you came over. It's my house.
Yeah. You can do whatever.
Can I wear shorts or sweats?
Yeah.
Or pants? And I did put on pants.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
I have this same debate because we get a lot of people I don't know that well, some I know really well, some older men, some, you know, Danielle Bradbury is a 21-year-old female. Like, I guess you have to wear clothes for the situation. And for you, I was just going to wear, like, old cut short Reeboks.
Yes.
But I didn't. I did put on pants for you. But I didn't have that whole long thought today.
Yeah.
Dave Barnes is here. There's a couple reasons I brought him in. One, because I'm a fan. But two, when I heard your new record, I said, oh, we got to get Dave Barnes in.
Well, that means a lot.
Yeah, because it's so good that I sent it to friends and said, hey.
Dude, that's really kind.
So here, we'll come back to it in a second. But who knew it would be so hard? Just to be myself.
Yeah.
Which is also the name of the record, right? I don't even know it's in front of me.
Yeah.
There's just too many heartbeats.
About 20 seconds into this song, I was like, I'm going to love this whole album. And I'm not blowing smoke.
Thank you, man.
It's just too many midnights.
There are horns in it. It's got kind of a Chicago meets like a James Taylor vibe. I was hearing it. Does that bother you if people compare you to other people?
No, it's a huge compliment. It's better than the opposite. That was different, Dave. You sounded excited.
Yeah.
Well, you really did it.
That's what I worry about because I've just finished my second book. And so I just finished editing it. I'm going through the last edit because it involves so many edits.
Right.
So you write it and then it comes back to you and it's terrible. Your editor just redlines the whole thing.
Right.
And then you edit it again. And then my editor sends me a bunch of questions to answer because obviously I didn't do a good job at fixing her edits. And so then I did the third edit just now, and I think I'm done. I hope I'm done.
Yeah.
But I know what's going to happen. I give the project to somebody, and they go, wow, that was a really interesting
read. You have a lot to say.
How about that?
Look at all those words.
How about that? Yeah,
You know, it's funny. I'm 39. I'm gonna be 40 in June, and so I feel like my career sort of has had two phases, the artist career, which I'm still doing, but then sort of like this separate new thing in the last really 3 or 4 years of writing with and for other people, especially in the country market. And I've never felt so old and useless. I mean, I'm around the most fit, like coolest people.
Thank you.
And I'm always the guy in the room that's like, well, you know, now's your age. You know? And so, like, I was laughing. We went to a friend of mine's last night, and it's all these artists, friends of mine. And everybody in that room is, like, jacked and in the best shape of their lives. Like, they're glowing. They have the coolest clothes. And I laughed with Annie, my wife, before we left. I was like, I'm never more insecure than the 30 minutes before we go to one of these parties. Because I'm going through my outfits like, that doesn't match. No, it's too old. You know, it's like, it's that the whole night. And so, for me, anytime I feel like people listen to these records, really enjoy them, it's such a win because it's like, this is my 12th album, if you count all of my albums. It's, I think, my ninth, like, non-Christmas, non-EP. But nine. that's a lot of stuff to say. So for me, I'm always like, I feel like with everyone I release, I'm like, right, everybody? Everybody? No? Right? You know? Because it's a lot of music, you know? I keep waiting for somebody. It's like, dude, that's enough. That's plenty of music.
This album, for me, I can always tell how much I like an album by how many times how many songs I save.
Oh, wow. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So what I'll do is I'll save a full album.
Yeah.
And then I fly so much, I just listen to it. And
yeah.
If a song doesn't interest me, but the second time, I'll just swipe it
off.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
Of your 12 songs?
Yeah,
12?
I think. Yeah, 12.
Because also, I get confused because I know your wife sings on one of the songs with you.
Yeah.
But I think, and I don't know which one, I think I kept 11 of them.
I will take 5, 4. You know what I mean, though? Like,
yeah.
These days, like, it's so hard to keep people's attention.
And I always am weird telling people how many songs I kept, but there's because like, then they're like, oh, you didn't like one of my songs. And it wasn't I didn't like it. It was just, there's so much. And then I start to get bored with everything.
Yeah.
And go, I've listened to the same thing 70 times in a row. Need some new.
Well, the question, I think, with a lot of artists would be like, how many would you keep on the record of your own record? You know what I mean? Like, how many would you sort of swipe and be like?
And as time goes by, but it gets less and less.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's like when you're making a record, at first you're super excited. By the time it comes out, you're like, oh, man, I was in a bad place to make that
decision. That's how I feel with every creative project that I do. Records, even the book I was talking
about. Yeah, I'm sure.
I am so over me.
Yeah.
I have never been so over me than right now.
Yeah.
I had to fight with them because I did not want my picture on the cover.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They said, hey, we really need your picture on the cover. I said, guys, I just spent 6 months writing about me, looking at me, thinking about me.
Right, right.
Let's not even put a cover on
it. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Let's just put it up, just the papers.
Yeah, yeah, just a smiley face.
That's it. I don't even want a cover.
Yeah, yeah.
Just page one is the cover
beginning.
Of this whole thing.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, but
that would actually be pretty,
I thought the idea was good, too. I'm glad you think that, because I thought it was so out of the box. And I thought, what if the cover was just page one?
I think that's it. I'm endorsing that right now.
And it was so crazy to them that they thought I was kidding. And so after the second time I said it and they still thought I was kidding, I had to just laugh it off.
You're like, right,
yeah,
kidding.
I'm crazy. Yeah. That's crazy.
That's me. Me and my ideas.
You know, crazy Bobby. But I did think that. But they're the ones spending the money on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in the end, you kind of have to find a balance.
Yeah. Yep.
But it's funny you bring that up. But I thought that was a good idea to make the first page.
Genius. Just write
the cover.
Because everybody's going to grab
it. Yes.
And then when they see like three back, it's like, oh my God, these are all the same.
Otherwise, what are they seeing on the cover? Some dorky dude in darkroom glasses going, hey, I'm trying to look about 7 years younger than I really am. Please read my book.
that would be the name of my autobiography, by the way. Just trying to look 7 years younger than I am. Dave Barnes. Please read.
But I really do. Like, really sincerely, I love the album.
Thank you, man.
The BGB shit.
Get all the parts.
I love it. We'll come back to it, but I just wanted you to know before we started, this is not a you know, any sort of bullcrap. Like, I love it.
That means a lot. It really does mean a lot. Thank you for saying that.
Yeah, that's a good one. I kind of geek out over that you're here. You know what's interesting about you is that we have a similar style and that we're both self-deprecating.
Mm-hmm.
We both love music and comedy.
Yeah.
The name of your comedy tour,
mm-hmm.
your music and comedy tour, is maybe the best name of a music and comedy tour that I've ever heard of.
Well, so can I tell you what happened? So you would know, I actually need to get some tips from you. Legitimately, I may need to ask you about this because we're still figuring out how to do it. Because, you know, I think what it's going to be is like 30 minutes of music, 20 to 25, 30 minutes of stand-up, and then another 15, 20 of music or something, the night's done. But so I did 5 or 6 stand-up shows, just stand-up, no guitar, like flew with just it was the best thing ever. I mean, it's like I get so jealous of my friends that get to like rock up to places with like a, you know.
Oh, it's, from playing in a band with the Raging Idiots, it's so much because there are people and instruments and pedal. When I go do stand-up, I just fly to an event and
I'm here.
I don't even need to sound check.
Yeah, no.
Like, I'll walk in and just tap the floor. I've checked in. I'll see you in three hours.
Yeah, see ya. So I did like 5 or 6 of those. The last one I did was in Denver. So it's this place called the Soil Dove, which is maybe one of the most interesting name of a place ever, but it's a great room. It's like a 300-seat room. It was sold out. It was great. So I come out and I could tell immediately something was wrong. Like just the vibe, you know, which doesn't happen a lot, thank God to me, but like I was like, this doesn't feel right. So I start the show. I make a joke about not having a guitar. And it just didn't go real well for about the first 3 or 4 minutes. And I was like, what is going on? You know, so I do the show. You know, it's like an hour 15 of jokes. I get done. I walk back and nobody leaves. I can hear that, like, no one is left. It's like encore clapping. And I'm like, I don't have enough. Like, that's it. That's it. That's all the funnies. So finally, they crank the music. Everybody leaves. I go to Twitter and I'm just, there's like 15 people just like livid. And I was like, what has happened? And what had happened is the venue had not advertised it really clearly, which was, and I, you know, I didn't name it the smartest thing. So I had to get online and like apologize.
Oh, they thought it was music.
Yeah. So they, so sorry, I should be clear. So they were like, see, I'm not clear. Isn't it ironic that I can't even tell you what happened clearly? But yeah, so they thought it was going to be a music show. And so people drive in from an hour or two away and I get done with the show and they're like, hey, dude, where's the song? Like, that was funny. Like, congratulations, where's the song? So with this one, I was like, we can't. And thankfully, everybody was super cool. I sent everybody a personal tweet just saying like, hey, so sorry. But, and I think once they saw what had happened, everybody was really cool, except one dude who's still mad. My dad. But he, no. But, so with this, I was like, I can't do that again. Like, that's going to break my heart if all these nights I show up, I do music, and then people are like, hey, where are you putting the guitar? And, or people are like, no, don't sing. Like, do some more jokes. So I thought, what is the clearest way that we can advertise this so no one can be like, well, dude, I didn't know you were going to do stand-up. Well, oh, no, yes, you did. Because the tour is called The Tour, where I sing songs and do stand-up tour. I was like, we can make it none more clear.
So deliberate, and it's so deliberate, it's funny. Because I went through the same thing with my first full stand-up tour. Like, I'd done a lot of stand-up dates where I would do one, I'd do a show or I'd do a couple shows. But people would expect the band or maybe other show members.
Yeah.
So I called it Funny and Alone. Just so, for the same reason you did that. I said, okay, look, this is what I'm coming to do.
Yeah.
I'm coming to be funny and I'll be alone. So all the expectations are in the title. That's why when I read yours, I said, man, his is way better than my name was. And I know what it is exactly.
Yeah, well, that's the hope.
But I do understand where people would, you're the music guy first.
Right.
In my mind, you have big songs. You have tons of records.
Yeah.
So I do see that if it wasn't advertised plainly, and you didn't play any during it.
None. I didn't even have a guitar.
And if you did an hour and 15 minutes, that's solid.
Yeah.
That's solid work.
Yeah.
Straight stand-up.
Yeah, it was just going.
Yeah, I think the name is quite ingenious and actually effective for what you're trying to do.
Well, yeah. I mean, I hope so. I think heading into these shows, it'll be interesting to sort of see what the feedback is. My thing is interesting, though, because I've held off so long on the comedy part of sort of my brand or who I am that I think people are finally like, yes, you're going to finally like do both of them, because I was just so scared for so long that the comedy would just sort of, you know, eat the music thing alive. And so I really wanted to get the music thing sussed out so that when I started doing anything that was slightly comedic live, that people wouldn't be like, dude, this music thing is fine, but you got to do this comedy thing, you know, because music is really my passion. And I love doing stand-up and being funny, but music is so much harder. It's so engaging. It takes so much more of my brain. And not that being funny is easy at all, but it's just not the thing that music is, you know?
Man, I just feel the opposite.
Really?
Yeah. And I think that, like, your main thing is music.
Right.
And you're going, music is so much. And my main thing is comedy, and I'm going, comedy's so much harder.
Yeah.
Yet they're both very vulnerable.
Yes, super. The best ones are, I think, for sure.
And you're just up on a stage.
Yeah.
And everyone is just looking at your mouth hole. If you're doing comedy, everything relies on your mouth hole. Everyone's watching your mouth hole.
Yeah.
That's it. Just your mouth hole.
Yeah.
I found with the guitar, because I do music during my show too, and I can't sing or play at the level that you are, but I find that I have more room to screw up.
Yeah.
I don't have to be. People don't expect anything from me musically. You know what? They probably don't expect a lot from you comedically because they don't. And maybe that's where it is with us. Yeah. I think maybe we just hit what it is.
Well, you know, too, it's really interesting because my comedy is sort of cheating for two reasons. One, because it's fans, so it's like people that know my music.
Oh, me too, though. But too, I'll do theaters, and I do sometimes large theaters. Yeah. I mean, I play theaters probably 1,200 to 2,500.
Yeah, that's a lot. And that's a lot.
They're big rooms. But
for stand-up, that's a whole lot.
And they're hard tickets. Yeah. You know, they're theaters. Yep. But exactly what you just said, I'm playing to my people.
Yeah.
And it's easier. Yeah. It's not cheating because we had to do something to create.
That's right.
So we did. They didn't just come to us. We didn't get inherited from our uncle. They had a business of comedy that said, "Hey, come watch my uncle Dave, my nephew Dave Barnes." Yeah. It's not like a car dealership.
Danny Barnes Comedy Hour.
They actually, what we've done, we've bonded with them in another way, and they trust us to come.
That's
to
exactly
this.
Right. That's
so
exactly
when you say
right.
cheating, I think that that's unfair.
But yeah, and it may be. I mean, I was laughing with a buddy of mine. I did a podcast with a buddy of mine. He was asking the same thing. He was like, "Do you feel?" Because he didn't. He was like, "You're not cheating. You've worked." It's exactly your point. He said, "You've worked so hard to get these people to pay attention to what you do." But I think for me, like, I've had friends like, "Dude, you should do Zanies," and I'm like, "I would be terrible." I mean, I think I would.
That's
do
why
it.
I don't do Zanies.
But I would be like, "Yeah, that's a different thing."
Mine's I do the Opry sometimes, and I'll go, and those it's not my crowd,
right?
And I do it just to sharpen myself and make me feel like, "Oh crap!" Because when I'm playing to my people, I can't wait to see them. They can't wait to see me, and we just go have fun.
That's right.
When I play the Opry, first of all, there are 90-year-olds that in any minute, I think they came to the Opry so they die at the Opry. Like it's a that's where they wanted to go. Like, let's go to the Opry. It's my last show ever. Right, and if I go, it's a beautiful. And there are people there I know that have no idea who I am. They didn't come to see stand-up.
Oh, yeah.
They have, and if I can make them laugh, and people who have no idea what my radio show is about, so I go, and if I can make that room work.
Yeah.
I go, I'm good. But I don't do it. I do it about once every 2 or 3 months.
Yeah.
Because for that reason, I don't want to go to Zany's and grind out with a group of people.
Ugh.
I played one once, and it was basically a restaurant.
Ooh.
I didn't know this.
This is dark.
And I don't want to say where it is, but because everybody was so kind to me. But I go, and they say, "Hey, we have this place, and it holds 800. And I said, "Okay, cool." They said, and it sold out so fast. Do it twice in a row. And I go, "Oh, okay, well, easy. That's awesome. And it's great money." Mm-hmm. And I don't have to just fly in.
Yeah.
And so I go and I get there and I realize it's a restaurant.
Mm.
And now when people are watching us do music or comedy, they're facing us.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is the way. It's four people looking at a table. Ugh. And I'm up on a stage telling jokes while they're making their chicken fried steak orders.
Ugh.
And the first show really wasn't pleasant because I was taking it all in and there were waitresses. And
oh, yeah.
And then the second show, I was like, I know what I'm working. I'm basically playing to a Cracker Barrel.
Yeah, that's right.
But it was a tough one. And that's why I don't think I could do a Zany's or a place where they didn't know me and have to grind. And I have so much respect for comedians. I have to come up that way by just being good.
Here's the thing, too. And this is something I realized when I started doing the stand-up thing a few years ago. And I was dabbling. I was literally like a toe in the water. Was Sting can get up and play a new song at anywhere in the world. And it can be terrible. But it's never that terrible because his voice is so unique. Even if he's singing the dumbest song ever, in the crowd you're like, "God, just that voice." His guitar playing, even if it's a bad song, "Oh, look how cool he plays the guitar." That's Sting. You're going to leave being like, "Holy crap, that was Sting." Jerry Seinfeld can get up to a crowd and bomb. And if you're not funny, you're just not funny.
Oh, yeah, you suck.
There's no redemption.
Jerry Seinfeld probably the greatest technical comedian of our day.
Without a doubt.
Can get up and bomb and you leave and go, "Whoa, he sucks."
That was terrible.
But you're right. Musically, you can get up and be like, "Oh, you know, I don't know. I didn't know the song, but it's freaking Sting."
It's Sting. And his voice sounded cool. The timbre of the way he played the guitar. It's something where you can redeem something out of that experience. If it's just, it's either funny or not funny. It's completely, it's like yes or no.
There's a thrill that I get in the first time people don't laugh. Now, I don't like it when people don't laugh. It's never – I don't chase the, "Ooh, that joke bombed."
Yeah, yeah.
But there's a thrill that I get when people don't laugh because that means I have to earn anything from that point on. Because I know when I walk out, the first 8 to 11 minutes are freebies.
Yeah.
They paid a ticket.
Yeah.
They're going to have a good time.
They're revved.
I'm out. We're ready to go. Yeah. So I know that first 8 to 11 minutes – everybody's in a good mood.
Yeah.
The first time I tell a joke and it doesn't go over, that means, okay, the exciting part is everything I say after that does, that means I've earned it.
Yeah, that's right.
And I don't feel like I've earned it because I'm not going to murder for an hour. I'm just not.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not one of the great comedians of our day, and I realize that. You know, when you make the list of the top 50, there's no picture of this nerdy dude with glasses and sideburns. That doesn't pop up. So, but that's a thrill for me when it doesn't work because the next time it does, that's literal currency in the comedy bank where I'm like, "Oh, that makes me feel so good."
Oh, yeah.
because now I'm working for this.
Yeah, yeah. And you are the whole show. I mean, you do have some favor because they're there. But about, yeah, 20 minutes in, you're just earning your keep. Every next joke makes. And I think the other thing is fascinating, too, is I learned these two lessons, too, in doing it, was a shorter show. Like, comedy wears you out. It wears the audience out. And it ebbs and flows. You don't want to be playing your encore the whole show, right? Like if some act got up and literally just play, it'd be like you'd just be like, I need, give me like a down, like a mid tempo or a slow, you know. You can't do it. It's the same with comedy. Like it needs, and you know, so that's okay. So the other day, and like now I'm breathing, and then okay, and then it needed it, and that was hard for me because I was like, why is everybody not laughing all the time? I was like, well. You can't. It's physically, you know, like you got to get to the point and then the point would be funny. And I think too, realizing like I was doing, like when I started doing these, I was doing like an hour and a half and my wife came to the show.
I mean, that is just
like,
a lot.
And she was like, Dave, I was done by 50 minutes. Like I was tired. Like because you're so, like the crowd has to engage. It's different than music. Music is sort of going by you and you're listening for a minute and you turn to your friend and you're singing along. Comedy, you are engaged. And I think for me, it was like, I had to learn like, how to do a set, because it was like, you know, I was literally like, I did like an hour and a half a couple times and people were just like, dude, like that's two shows worth of stuff, and it really wasn't funny.
I look at it like they're flexing a muscle the whole time. It could you hold your bicep flexed for an hour and a half?
If you had to, you probably could. Maybe you're in
But
great
it's
shape.
Tough to do. Like, yeah. I'm holding mine right now.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah.
And so sometimes you have to let the flex go.
Right, right.
And so I don't want to leave somebody flexing for an hour and 30 minutes.
Same.
And I don't want to get irritated at them for not holding the flex.
That's right. Hold the flex.
So I keep a clock. You can't see it, but I keep it underneath my front monitor that tells me where I am.
Yeah.
Because if I'm killing, great. If I'm not. And I also break my show up in my mind, too, where I come out, I do the first 15 minutes, it's straight-ahead comedy, and I'm not really pounding them with the stuff that I feel is the real strongest,
right.
But I'm giving them solid B-plus stuff is proven.
Yeah.
Then, since I have a guitar and I do music, I'll do 12 to 15 minutes of music, because, again, what that does, it gives them a break.
Break, yeah, for sure.
It does give them a break. Yeah. So I'll do a little bit of music. Then what I do after that is I go and I work some material for about 8 to 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And if none of it works,
yeah,
it's like 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Like if my working material is not working, yes, yeah, the 8 minutes starts peeling back real quick. And so then I get back to something. And then I close and we do, you know, I bring out, like on this tour to be Brandon Ray, we'll do a couple musical things together, and then I'll do about 2 minutes of Varian by myself. And that's it. And I find that if I break it up, it even lets the audience go, chapter one.
Yeah.
Chapter two.
That's right.
I went to watch Chris Rock in Atlanta, and his special's on Netflix now. But I went to watch him, and he did 2 hours and 8 minutes.
Dang.
And it was awesome, but it was even too long to see. Although Jerry Seinfeld is the greatest technical comedian, I think of my generation, Chris Rock is the best.
Mm-hmm.
Just at how his observations on culture.
Yeah, it's ingenious.
And it was fantastic, but I was tired at 2 hours.
Well, especially someone like him, because he's saying things that are profound.
Yeah.
I mean, they're funny, but he'll make a point or two. You're like,
Socrates-esque.
Wow. Yes.
Yeah.
Very, very, very. So you're like, you're not just laughing. You're like, hold on, I got to think about it. Wow, that is true. Like, you know.
And I left that going, I should do shorter sets.
Yeah.
Even though he just did 2 hours and 8 minutes, I go, wow, I'm not an eighth of what that is.
Yeah.
And I should really peel mine down because I was tired of watching the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
Or greatest of our time, I should say.
Yeah, I agree.
So, well, man, we could probably do a whole deal on comedy just talking about that. I'm going to talk about the spot for 1 second. So remember the gigantic data breach at Equifax last September? The one that exposed social security numbers, names, birth dates, over to 145 million customers. It looks like now even more sensitive information was exposed than first reported. Documents provided to a Senate committee revealed that tax IDs and driver's license, all those details may have been accessed as well, and that's not good. And so cyber criminals, they have all this information, and they take it and they sell it. There are so many things today. You're all connected in one weak link and all the connections and all the clouds, and the next thing you know, people have your info. But for me, I have LifeLock Identity Theft Protection with the power of Norton Security to help me with the threats against your identity, all the devices. If there's a problem, the agents will work to fix it. I have LifeLock. It's awesome. No one can stop every cyber threat, prevent all identity theft, or monitor transactions at all businesses. But new LifeLock with Norton Security is able to uncover threats that you might miss. Go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK. The promo code is BONES for an extra 10% off your first year. Promo code BONES for an extra 10% off. There you go. All right, so let's talk about music for a second. Because holy cow. Let's do what I know you from first.
Okay.
Which may be what you made the most money from. I don't know. When Blake Shelton cut God Gave Me You.
Oh, yeah.
Is that the biggest meal ticket so far?
I mean, it was... So I wrote it by myself and I owned all the publishing.
Oh, wow. So it wasn't a publishing company.
No,
like that you
no.
own... Wow.
So it was a... Yeah, God was very kind in that... Yeah, that it was...
And I didn't know you when Blake came in and he goes, hey, this is what happened with this song.
Mm-hmm.
And he said him and Miranda were driving down a road and he was listening to the, country, mm-hmm. the Christian station and he hears you sing the song.
Yeah. God gave me you
for the ups and downs. So then what happens? Does someone call you and go, hey, Blake heard this song and he wants to cut it or Blake's thinking about cutting it. What do you think? Like, what happens there with that?
Yeah. So Dave Haywood, who I love that you had on the...
Oh, yeah.
I mean... Love Dave.
Talk about a smart dude.
Oh yeah.
Holy
cow. Yeah. We don't play words with friends. his wife is Kelly, and Kelly used to work at Warner, and so she's a really good friend of ours. We've known Kelly forever, way before I knew Dave. And she called. It was kind of the sequence of events. So the first call was like, "Hey, Blake is her guy. Gave me you. It may be in the wedding." And I was like, "Oh!" And literally, it was so out of context for me. I literally said, "Blake who?" And she was like, "Shelton." And
it
I was
may be
like,
in the wedding, meaning his wedding.
He and Miranda,
right?
So I was like, oh, that's great, you know. And I really wasn't in the world nearly like I am now. So I had a lot of friends that were country artists. I'd had a couple cuts that were totally from people just knowing albums, going, hey, man, you mind if I record this song? I'd never, like, purposefully tried to write for that world. And so it was totally out of context. I was like, oh, that's awesome. So it's maybe in the wedding. Well, then she comes over to eat, like, a month later with us one night, my wife and I, and she's like, oh, this is so random. I think Blake's going to record God Gave Me You. And I was like, that's awesome, you know? But I'd learned from my Nashville friends, like, you just never, I mean, you know, you never count that before it's hatched because those things can change so much.
Oh, the famous saying, never count a song before it's hatched.
Oh, yes, that's even better. That's great. So I was like, great. So then, like, again, a month later, I pull up to my house after writing one day, and there's all these cars there, and I walk in, it's all of my friends, and nobody knows why we're there. So I'm like, hey, is everything okay? Because my wife was pregnant, and they're like, yeah, I don't know. Annie just told us to be here. And I'm like, okay. And so she and Kelly walk out with this little, like, with some champagne and, like, a cake. And it just said that Blake had decided to single it, which I even then I was like, this is awesome. But I didn't really understand what that meant. So I was like, that's great. And I think a lot of I'll never forget Luke Laird saw me a couple of days later and who I went to school with randomly, MTSU.
School. Oh, Luke Wing.
Yeah, like Jesse Alexander. There was a bunch of us there. It was really
everybody
random.
That's been up here? It sounds
yeah,
like
yeah,
this
yeah.
is the whole Dave
so,
Barnes
so,
graduating
so
class.
Luke sees me, and I'll never forget this in Bongo Jo- or Frothy Monkey a couple days later. He's like, man, congrats on the single. He's like, do you understand what that means? And I was like, what do you mean by that? He was like, just monetarily. And I was like, no. And he was like, well, you're just, it's going to be a fun ride. And I was kind of like, okay, you know. So it was a real blessing because I think I got to enjoy it from a really... just like pure, unadulterated, like it's just fun seeing your song being sang by the superstar and the world sort of respond to it. Not sort of like, how's it doing on the chart? You know, like, where are we? Is it got a bullet? You know, I didn't know any of that stuff. Which is kind of why with this second one with Thomas, the second single I've ever even had in country when it was a number one,
Craving
it was such
you.
A different, yeah, it was yeah. such a different thing for me because I was like, where is it? How's it doing? You know, I'm texting his manager, you know, it's like, so it was kind of fun to do both versions of that experience because the first one was so, I don't know, like literally people would be like, dude, where is it? I'd be like, what do you mean? Like on the chart. I was like, I think it's on there. I don't really know, you know? So it's a fun experience to do it this time. Kind of, it was just different, you know, because you're watching it and you're, oh.
And you've also had some success and you know what can happen financially.
Yeah.
You got
yeah.
kids.
Oh yeah.
You got
oh, yeah.
a mortgage.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So you know what has happened, you'd like to see it happen again
yeah.
because when you're making money doing this, you can create other passion
mm-hmm.
projects.
Mm-hmm.
So here's Blake doing God Gave Me You for the ups and downs. So I had no idea that's how the story happened. I think Blake, and I knew, I guess, when did that song come out?
2010.
These songs can move so fast now.
Oh, dude. And that was like, that was really fast. I mean, that was like a 15-week, 13-week or something.
That's extremely fast.
It was flying.
Yeah. But it's wild because I hear it, and, you know, you wrote it, and it goes, what, top five on the Christian chart? Something like that?
Yeah, yeah. God
gave me. And when you sing it, I know it's a Christian song. But when Blake sings it, it doesn't.
Well, so here, this is one of my favorite stories to tell. So the condensed version is, I just made this record called "What We Want, What We Get," and I call my. This is like the story you've heard of many times. I call my producer and I'm like, "Hey man, I got this extra song I just wrote. I think it's pretty cool. I'm gonna send it to you." So I did like a little demo, send him "God Gave Me You." He calls me. He's like, "I've already booked the band. We're recording it tomorrow." I was like, "Oh, so I guess you like it." You know, it's kind of one of those things. So we go and we record it. I was on the road a ton then. He messes with it a ton. He sends me, and it's like this poppy version of it. It's a version that I put out. But I was like, what is this? He's like, dude, I really think this thing has legs if you'll let it. Because it had the hook at the. And I was like, no, man, this is like. Because we did kind of like a band version of it, you know? So I was like, I don't know, man. And so ironically, I'd been going through this season. I just turned 30, where I was just really struggling with like what I was doing and. Do people like what I'm doing, where I'm in the industry? Because I've always sort of been the guy that didn't have the major record deal, I had the indie deal. And I love my career. I wouldn't change any of it. But, you know, I think in comparison, as C.S. Lewis says so well, is a thief of joy. And I was in a season of that where I was seeing friends that were, things were happening. And I was just really struggling with that. And so I literally just prayed for encouragement. That was all I did. That was a one-word prayer. I just felt like, Lord, I just need some encouragement. And so my manager calls after we recorded "God Gave Me You," and he's like, "Hey man, Christian programmers have heard this song and they really like it." And I'd never done anything in the Christian world. I'd played, you know, some church events and stuff like that, and I'm a Christian guy, but I'd been really careful about that because I just knew like that's a tricky little thing. If you know, it can kind of become
pigeonhole you too.
It can, it can be a little like quicksand if you aren't careful, where they kind of grab, which is great, but I think for where I was playing clubs and bars and all these other things, it was tricky. So. Long story short, my version of that was amazing. I went and did radio for the first time ever, like radio, and I loved it. It was so much fun sitting talking to people and doing. We're back with Dave.
Hey everybody, Dave Barnes is here playing 10 in a row and all Burns the hits.
God made me you. Tell me about God made me you, Dave. But so it was really fun. But I thought that was the answer to prayer. Like so, it was one of the top spun songs in Christian that year, which was a whole new experience for me. And it was literally just the beginning of really what it was going to be. So it was this crazy sort of story of this one word prayer that turned into this just massive, massive blessing, you know? So it was crazy because I'd never done CCM and it turned into this thing.
I didn't know that. Never would have thought that.
Yeah.
So what? That wasn't the intention.
Mm-mm.
That ended
up
being the purpose.
Yeah. There was an independent radio
plugging
guy in Nashville and he heard it and he called us and he was like, "Listen, I really think this thing could have legs in CCM because it's a love song and it's not a Christian song." It is, because it, you know, ultimately it is, but it wasn't something where I was like, you know, people are gonna be raising their hands at this at Passion or something.
And you know, when I heard it the first time, it was obviously Blake's version, and I never thought this is a Christian song. I thought this is a love song.
Yeah.
And
which is what it is.
Once you track back, I go, "Oh, it has the word God in it so much." I mean, the first word's God. How did I miss that?
Yeah.
So, and you mentioned the Thomas Rhett, because you wrote "Craving You" with one of my favorites, Dan. Did you write Dan Huff?
No, I wrote it with
Dan Huff. Produced it.
Yeah, Dan produced
it. That's what it is. That's why
I know
Dan.
Was he the nicest guy ever in the history of time?
When he did this with me, I just stared at him.
I loved that interview.
And I would go, "Oh, I'm supposed to talk in this." Oh.
He's looking at you. You're like, "Oh, yeah."
I thought this was the Dan Huff TED Talk. I was just taking it in. I thought this was the one solo I get to.
So, he is such a sweet, talented human being.
So you wrote this one. You like that cigarette, that shot of 100 proof. Did you write this with Thomas's manager's boyfriend?
Yeah, Julian.
Yeah. And I know Julian. I met Julian because he produced a lot of Thomas's last record.
Yeah, and a lot
and
of the One Direction stuff. Yeah.
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 And Julian's awesome.
He's amazing.
British or Australian? He's something.
No. Oh. He's from L.A.
He is?
Yeah.
I thought he just lived in L.A.
But he oozes, "I'm from somewhere
he
cool."
He oozes
vibes.
Something. Yes. Geography cooler than
he
you is what he oozes.
He can any accent and I'd be like,
his hair's
amazing.
Just like the long.
Yeah.
Cool. So you wrote this with him?
Yeah. Huh. And Thomas was supposed to be there. That story is so funny. I've thanked Thomas for this so many times for not showing up. But like, he was supposed to be there and got sick. And so I showed up to Virginia, Thomas's manager's house where Julian was. And I walk in. I didn't know Julian at all. I'd never met him. And he's like, hey, man, Thomas can't be here. And so we had that little dance of like, should we go or what should we do? Order lunch and then like hit it.
I mean, all the dates I've ever been on?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah. Hey, with her doing that to me? Yeah. Oh, great.
But yeah. So thankfully, we both like, no, we should write something. And so one of the advantages of obviously writing with a dude that's producing something is he knows, you know, he's got the intel. So he's like, you know what, man, he kind of needs like a jam. And so we just kind of threw around some ideas, and he started putting this little track together, and it was just kind of, I literally think it took us 2 hours, right? It was so fast.
Which is really fast.
It's super fast, yeah. And so I kind of thought, well, nothing, you know, that's too fast. Like, you can't write. I mean, I loved it. And
you got to put 4 hours in for it to be a quality song.
Yeah, that's
anything
right.
less than
that's
four
right.
hours,
that's
it's
right.
not
yeah.
good.
Yeah, it's got to be the house that built me. That took, like, you know, 35 times to write or something, I'm sure. But it was so awesome because Thomas Hurt, and he literally texted me, like, the next day. He was like, this is what I needed. Thanks. Cool. And I was like, that's the best that's ever worked, you know. It was awesome.
I believe it was the first single?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Right, if I'm thinking back.
Yeah.
They all start to run together. And I think that it's a disservice to the artist and the music that they do run so fast, because I worked in pop and hip hop and alternative and I've done every format.
Yeah.
And this is the format that I like the most. But what I dislike about it is the songs don't have any longevity in country as they even do in pop. I was looking at the pop chart yesterday and that Dua Lipa.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that song's been number one for multiple weeks. It's been in the top five for 15 weeks. Mm-hmm. In the top five. Mm-hmm. Songs earn the top and they stay on the top. And people will always know her for that song.
Yeah.
Thomas can put out a song and it goes number one, but it was so fast that people may never really even care to hear it again. And that's not to our time, but even Luke. Mm-hmm. Luke puts out so many number ones that he can't even play them all at a show.
Yeah.
They don't resonate.
Well, it's the thing, I'm learning this, and you know this so much better than I do, but I think from an outsider looking in, the symbiotic nature of country music is so fascinating because, you know, you guys as programmers and DJs, you need the hit artists to write hits, but they need you to it's this program. So it's this wonderful thing because it's like, hey, Thomas, we need hits from you. And he goes, well, I need y'all to play these songs. So it's wonderful. And it's, to me, one of the last bastions of radio that's really still working. Like, you know what I mean?
Here's my issue with that, though, is that what happens is I'm really not a proponent of how radio is being programmed.
Yeah.
So I'm so anti-radio while having the biggest radio show. It's the weird, like that's a whole thing. But what is also weird about it is that country artists do the opposite of what hip hop and pop artists do. They will put out songs like crazy.
Yeah.
But then they'll put a single out and they'll let it have time and build while they're putting out all this other stuff for their fans.
Yeah.
Country artists put out a record. And then they just sit back for a year.
Yeah.
Then you just wait for another year for Al Dini to put a new record out. Because that's the culture of it.
Yeah.
Songs fly up the chart.
Yeah.
But the record just stays out there. We're in pop, hip-hop, alternative.
Yeah.
They're putting out songs all the time.
Yeah.
But the big songs stay up there. They're so different. Yeah. And I feel like just a lot of songs get lost as forever songs.
Yeah.
Because of that, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah,
well, I spent way too much time thinking about this.
Well, and I think too, to your point, there really is. That's not fair. I'm sure some musicologist could sit down with me and be like, "That's not true." But I do feel like, I think that's why the songs that are like the really big songs that really tend to be top five played songs of the year, they usually have some sentiment that's a little more substantial.
Yeah, and sometimes they're ballads because they actually have words that people hear.
Yeah,
and there's the girl crushes, the burning houses that will always be massive songs, even if Little Big Town decided to break up and never be. That song's always going to be huge.
That's true.
Cam can never have another hit, and Burning House will always be a song that she can play, and that's the thing.
It's incredible.
But yeah, that whole situation. I'm always fighting about that with no one, actually. I just sit and fight it myself in my room. Yeah. I started to think, who do I fight with? Well, I just yell about it on the radio and nobody answers.
Into the vacuum.
Yeah.
Into the void.
How about this? You know somebody I really enjoy? A friend of mine is Lucy Silvis.
Oh, my goodness. I'll start like crying and laughing all at the same time if I talk about it. I love that woman.
We talk about her so much on this podcast. If there's an episode where she doesn't pop up, I go, wow, something was missing. Because she's somehow layered herself into everybody's life because she's so awesome.
She's the best.
And you wrote Villain. 3, 2, 1, let the bombs go off, let the wives get cut, because we've had it. She came out and opened.
Yeah.
and did a bunch of shows for me, and it was one of those times where I go, man, what's wrong with this world where you're opening for me?
She, I've told her this so many times. She's one of my closest friends in Nashville. I mean, I love, she's like a sister. We're doing a round actually when
did you guys go out together and do shows?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. You guys went out and like, I saw you guys in like New York. Yeah.
She is so unbelievably talented. She's one of maybe 10 people I know that you could put her, and I literally mean in any club in the world. I don't care if it's a hip hop club. I don't care if it's a country and Western, like the, with the net around where you put the
bottles.
Throw
the beer bottles into the gate. Yeah.
When she starts singing, I don't care who the people are, they're going to shut up and listen. And I've watched her do that so many times. It becomes like this guilty, dark pleasure of mine just to watch her get up there and just be like, you don't know who, but you will. You know, you're about to be wowed. Because she's so freaking talented. Yeah. And I don't know a lot of people I can say that about. Mark Broussard, a buddy of mine, is one of those. Like, just voices and presences that when they start to sing, it doesn't matter what you like musically. You're like, hold on.
I think Caitlin Smith does a bit of that, too.
Yes, Caitlin is captivating.
Where you just go, oh, let me look at my wallet. What the?
That's exactly right.
Caitlin Smith is very Lucy-like to
me. Oh, my gosh.
Where you just go, whoa. There's, I don't know what they're happening, trying to do, but it doesn't matter. Like, I'm in.
Yeah.
Whatever they're in, I'm in.
And, you know, that day we wrote Villain was really fun, too, because that was Maren. It was me and Lucy and Maren that wrote that. And you talking about, I literally just sat there and was like, that's cool. Well, you guys, you're good. You're also really good. That was a great moment together that I'm getting to. I mean, and it was
just
really
sitting in
it was amazing. So the funny thing is, Maren actually sang the demo because I kind of worked on the track and then would help them write and kept working. And so Maren sang it, and within like 2 or 3 days, Lucy was like, "Man, like I love this song, guys." Like the next day, she's like, "I mean, I keep singing this song, guys." And like the, you know, third or fourth day out, she's like, "Are you guys cool if I just record this?" You know, and we're like, "Yeah." But that was like one of those days you pinch yourself where you're just like, "This is, I'm getting to watch two people who are just assassins at what they do." You know, it was incredible.
Let me play another one of your new songs here. By the way, check out Dave's album, Who Knew It Would Be So Hard to Be Myself. It's a very long title. But if you can get through the title, you should check out the songs. I was like, who knew it? I'll come back later. It would be so hard to... maybe Wednesday.
Even the acronym is too long.
Who knew? Because it's a big old love I got for. Your whole vibe's positive.
Yeah.
Where's that guy? How does that...
So, you know, it's so funny. I heard Dave mention this, too. So, do you know the Enneagram? You heard just a million things about the personality test thing.
Yes.
Dave mentioned it.
Yes.
Mine's,
I haven't done it, but...
It's basically the ever-positive guy. And it's just, I'm one of those guys that, like, I'm the same with movies. I'm like, there's so much darkness in the world and so much stuff that's just hard. Like, I like to... And sometimes I like music to just rip my face off and just beat the crap out of me. But, you know, a lot of times I want to escape. I want to feel, I just want to be like, God, that groove feels great or whatever. So I tend to be the guy that's like, let's offer something new to the world that you, if you just want to listen to this and have a good time and forget about all the crap's going on. But, you know, it's funny. I'll tell you, I loved your interview with John, with Mayer. And I thought something you said, something that really influenced this record, truthfully. Y'all's interview was so great. And I think John is obviously so wonderful. But, you know, when y'all were talking about In the Blood, it really, I started thinking about that song a lot when I was kind of in the middle of making this record. And I felt the same way. I mean, that song to me is such an important song. I was like, that song is genius. It's so good. And so I sat down and was like, what makes that song what it is? And I finally realized, I think the reason I would tell someone they need to listen to it or that it's important is because it's vulnerable, is because it's saying something that's really like, you know, it's sensitive. I'm really showing you something in me that I don't show mostly. And I think that's what makes a lot of music important is that it has a message that's like needs to be heard. And I think a lot of that has to do with vulnerability. So when I was writing this record, I had like these positive songs and I was like, you know, I haven't ever really let myself go there. And literally that interview was a big part of that, is me going, you know, I'd love to feel like this record is something that people not only go, man, we love it, but go, you need to listen to this because Dave is really saying some stuff. So there's a few songs on this record that I hadn't written until that point, and I think a lot of that was from just listening to y'all talk about that song especially, because it was really profound to me. Like, I was like, why is that song? Why would I say it's such an important song? You know what I mean?
What song, what's a post that Realization song.
Yeah,
the
there's a song especially called Chasing Dreams that's very
That's a jam. It's one of those that I picked out as one of my favorites, so I put the hook up first.
Chasing dreams, dreams, dreams.
Oh, the jam, dude. Yeah. Like, you know I'm telling the truth because I know all the songs.
But I won't stop chasing. I admit it, I ain't been myself. It's my impression of somebody else.
I was listening to this song in my car the other day, and, you know, I'm lucky enough that I created this podcast out of just love of songwriters, and so I've been exposed and have met a lot of great songwriters, and they all say, you know, it's all, you know, it's about the hook, it's about the hook, it's about the, you know, and this literal song comes on, because I have it at the top now of my Spotify, and, you know, chasing dreams, dreams, and I'm going, man, that hook is so strong and takes me back to it that I started actually listening to the words of the because that song for some reason triggered that in me. It goes, wow, that song, it brings me back all the, it was simple, but it was all about the hook, and I go, I should listen to the words. Yeah, weird, man.
You know what that song's about, oddly enough, no lie. It's basically about me writing. It's where I got my pub deal. And for the last 3 or 4 years, how hard it's been, man. This job is like, no. I think especially for me being an artist, writing my basically all my stuff by myself for myself. It was like, yeah, I know how to do that. And it'd been great, and it had some success and whatever. And then doing this as a job was just such a, it just kicked my face in. I was like, why is this not working yet? Like, seeing your friends that are... And I think artistry, too, is so different because it's so esoteric. Like, I can't compare myself to John or...
It's hard not to, by the way.
It's really hard not to.
You do. You get yourself into potholes.
Oh, my gosh.
It's almost impossible not to. Even though we know we shouldn't, we all still do.
Well, and two, for me, it was a change from artistry, which you can't really compare yourself. Like, I came up right behind, like, Mraz and Mayer and Howie Day and some of these guys. But I never, like... I never have tried to grid myself against those guys. It's impossible. They grew up in different places with different parents, with different musicalities, with different influence. So you can't do that. But all of a sudden you move to Nashville, you start writing for other people, and there is a grid. Did you get a cut? No, I didn't. I didn't get a cut on that record. Well, then, okay. Did you? Okay, we got a cut. Is it a single? No, I mean, it's just, it's a cut, but it's not a single. Okay, well, then that guy got the single. That girl got the... And it was all... I just got so in my head. I was like... First, I think I suck at this, too. Like, why am I so intensely jealous of people who I have deep respect and love for, and that weird rub of, like, I love these people, yet I'm so mad at their success.
You're
and
jealous
all that kind
of
stuff.
Just because you're disappointed in you. That's how I am.
That's
I get
exactly
jealous
right.
of other people, not because of them, but because I'm disappointed in me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Get angry at others because I'm upset that I haven't done more.
That's right.
But, yeah, this song... The hook is so on and simple to the listener that I go, oh, man. So next time I'm not musical like you at all in any way. But when I write funny songs, I have to go, okay, I can make things simple. Because I've met all these great songwriters, and they're like, well, here's what we need to do. Come back around. And I heard this song, and I go, you know what? This is what I need to do.
Mm.
Just make the chorus really simple and catchy, and then the rest of it really matters more.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I don't even know if what I said makes sense, but this was the song I was thinking about the other day.
Wow.
Because I mean, I'm knee-deep into your stuff right now.
That's
really all the time.
What it seems, feel my heart breaking. But I won't stop chasing.
That might be my favorite song on the record.
Thanks.
Yeah, I think it might be.
I love that song.
You just sang this song for my children with your wife, right? Is this the one about you sing?
Mm-hmm.
That's your wife, right? Same last name, I assume.
Yeah.
Unless it was just the most random.
No.
So I don't know the story about your wife. Is she a singer?
No, dude. This whole thing is hysterical.
Okay, that's why I didn't know the story about your wife.
So she basically, she sung on a couple of my things. It's BGVs. Like, it's not featured or anything. But Spotify, for some reason, when it came up, the night it came up, they put featuring and then, like, this code. It was, like, 02_79234.
Oh, I worked with him once. He's awesome.
He's amazing, but he wasn't on this track, you know. He's been in New Zealand for the last year. And so we were all confused, like, why does it have this featuring thing? Plus, who is what robot is that? So I think what happened is that whoever cleared it up was like, oh, it's got this girl on her name. So now when you look at the song, it's just with Annie Barnes, and she's like, oh, that's not how this was supposed to go. Like, she's like debuting on Dave Barnes' new album.
Oh, I saw it, and I went to it, and I said, oh, this is them both singing about their kids.
Yeah.
And I guess she's his wife, but yeah. I've never heard
of. But she literally just sings BGB chorus.
That's funny. Is that in her contract? You didn't know?
Oh, dude, she hates it now because she wants to just be back there. She drives me crazy. Like, it's so cute. Every record, she's like, you gonna have me sing on it? Can I sing on it? And then I'll get in the studio. She's like, oh my God, I'm so nervous. Hold on. The headphones too loud. Too loud. Okay, not enough. I don't know how to do that. You know, and then like when this came out, she's like, of course, it looks like I'm featured. So I was like, oh my God, I didn't know you had a song on Dave's track.
That's funny. Well, Dave, what else? So much here.
So much to peruse.
I have everything up. They have the Christmas record.
Oh, yeah.
I'm always intrigued by Christmas records.
Yeah, I love Christmas music. Is probably my favorite music to write.
Yeah?
Because it's such a fixed target. It's like, it's kind of like comedy, truthfully. It's like, you know if you hit it or you know if you miss it. There's really no in between. Like, you know when you get down to something, you're like, that makes you feel like Christmas. Or you're like, that doesn't make me feel like Christmas.
Do you record it at an odd time and then make the room seem Christmassy?
Yeah, it's like July.
Do you method act it? And you for a whole week working up, you're like, 4 days
till Christmas. Like, yeah, we have the studio like 52 degrees.
You have the tree up in the house, though. Kids are living the life. Kids.
They all look like the kid Ralphie.
You're the Daniel Day-Lewis of Christmas music.
Baby, let's just light the fire.
But I got a new dress.
Christmas tonight. Who's just singing with you on this?
Hillary.
Oh, Hillary Scott.
Yeah.
All right, so you say that. Yeah.
If we don't go out for Christmas tonight.
You know, I have like a couple of wishes in my career, and one of them still left because God's just been so kind. It's been such a fun run, but I feel like I'm about to die now. But it's the last words. But one of them is I want Bublé to cut that song so bad. Because to me, it's like, it's the less rapey version of Baby It's Cold Outside.
Yeah, you're right.
And so when we wrote it, me and Clint Lagerberg wrote that. And we had so much fun, right? We did it as a duo, and then I recorded it. And it's and thankfully, like, people really enjoyed it. But I want somebody that can turn it into a thing. Because I really think in so much of the feedback we've gotten, it's been out for, you know, 6-7 years now. But is that people are like, yeah, this is like the clean version of that. It's the happier, less like,
go to sleep.
You know, like, you don't need your phone. There's no need for an Uber. But, you know, it's, and so that's still one of like the two. Like, if somebody was like, if you could have like three wishes that like you can get and then your music career is done, one of them for me would be to have like Bublé or somebody do like a duet and see that really get a run at like the new Christmas duet, you know, that everybody's like, oh, we should do that too, you know.
Well, what's the goal now?
Yeah, that's a great
question.
You
put out a record.
Yeah.
And you're writing stuff, but what's the goal now?
Yeah, you know, life has changed a lot for me because, like, from when I was probably 22 to about 30, I was hitting it really hard, like, you know, playing a lot. Never as much as, like, the guys who were, because I was in the indie world. I was, like, the singer-songwriter guy that wasn't signed. So my schedule was never anything like, you know, our friends or even gosh, yours would be, where you're, like, every weekend and doing the thing. But when we had kids, man, I love being a dad. I love it so much. It's like my favorite thing. And so I was like, how can I do this in a way where I can still go play my shows? I can still do what I love to do and make enough money to sort of have it, you know, a family eat and live and be humans until I'm not responsible for them anymore. And God was just good because I was right at the time God Gave Me You happened. So it kind of created this new other lane in my career where I could sort of slow down my artistry a little bit, needing to be gone and playing shows and stuff. And so now I think it's a lot more about, like, you know, how do I sort of maximize road time and also, you know, I mean, again, man, I'm gonna be 40 this summer. I literally feel like it's such a blessing that people even care. You know, there's just so much music, man.
Yeah,
it's like,
there's so much. And the people that do care, you have to super serve them.
Mm-hmm.
And really, that's your focus. And that's what matters.
That's right.
I went through that struggle. And I'm still going through it a bit where I was like, you know what? I'm just going to be famous for everybody. I'm just going to be the next Suzanne Summers. You know?
That's I was going
to
say.
A lot of people compare me to her. I was like, I'm going to be the next. Everybody's just going to love me because I'm Suzanne Summers.
That's right. That's right.
And then I started to realize, you know what's really important to me are the people that get me.
Mm.
And I get them. So I'm going to make sure that, and I'm going to try to satisfy them. And what I've noticed is when I target my people, not everybody, but when I target my people, that piece of pie starts to spread a little by little.
Yeah.
More so than if I tried to throw it to everybody and just saw what happened.
Yeah.
And I think that's been so far a secret to what I've been able to do is instead of being trying to be famous for everybody, because there is so much out there.
Yeah.
You're not, especially now, because back in the day there were 4 networks. There were 8 radio stations.
Oh, yeah.
There wasn't online. So if you do have this niche, you do have this audience, that's your audience.
Yes.
And continue to give them what they want and what they love and watch it grow instead of throw chum out all over the place and nothing grows because you're just in the middle of this super highway of passing cars.
Well, you know, too, and I'm sure you see this a lot and have for your career, but, you know, one of the tricks of being an artist that's had so many records is there's always that temptation to reinvent. How do I reinvent? But to your point, sometimes the worst thing you can do is to reinvent, and then the one crowd you have is kind of like, ugh. Yeah.
So there's a radio segment that we do called Tell Me Something Good, and we've done it for 15 years. And at times I get tired of doing it because we've done it for 15 years. And I go, man, I just am tired of doing this. Mm. And not all the time, but there are brief periods where I'm like, I just want to scrape the whole thing. And we do research, and that's our most popular segment. That segment, by the way, we started doing it, it was my mid-20s. We started doing it at 5 a.m. It would research. Other shows would start doing it because they were forced to do it because it researched so well with us.
Wow.
And then it became like Seacrest called, was like, I'd like to tell me something good. Do you care? And all of a sudden, this one segment that we used to do, not that everybody stole it from us, but because it had success, it bred other companies to go, well, we'd like that success. We're going to start doing it. And so all of a sudden, there's this huge Tell Me Something Good, and all the stations are doing some sort of it, some incarnation of the same segment. And so I started to go, man, I don't want to do this anymore. And then, but I get it back, and it's like, what do people love the most? Freaking Tell Me Something Good. Mm. I've been doing it 15 years every day, and it's still what people love the most. So I go, as much as I'd like to reinvent myself at times, I can reinvent other little parts of me, but I still should make the main thing the main thing.
Well, and that's, you know, I don't think you can say that better, in my opinion. I think that's so well enunciated. And I think that's a temptation, especially of an artist in my season. So not where TR is, not where artists who are in their third, fourth, second record. That's not the time for that. That's the time for invention. And
it's
how
the time to figure out who you are.
Yeah.
More so than change up, it's figure out
that's
who
you
are.
And I think now, you know, and it's tough, man. I mean, I had a really long conversation, to be really honest, with my manager a couple days ago, just going like, how do we feel how the record's gone? And it was kind of frustrating for both of us. One, I've never been like the sexy artist, but two, I'm definitely not the sexy artist now. So, you know, you watch a lot of these opportunities, you go, man, that would be so fun to do these things, and they don't happen. And it's like, well, I feel like the record's good. And just having to go, you know what, though? Look, I'm not the young, new dude. And I was at one point, and it was so awesome, and I got a lot of those opportunities, but I'm not anymore. And it's not about that anymore. It's making sure the people that do love what I do get what they want, and like that they're getting the songs, they're getting the Tell Me Something Good, they're getting the moments for me that they go, let me tell you why I listen to Dave Barnes, let me tell you why I listen to Bobby Bones Radio, because they go, this is what I get. And the minute we start deviating from those things, you can always add to them, but I think the minute you start changing these things, it really bring people to what you do, it gets a little, you can get into trouble, because they start going, well, no, I go to these people. And I think that's one of the hardest things about being older as an artist that's helpful, is you realize like, wow, people do kind of listen to me for a few things. You know, they listen to your show for, I mean, everybody listens to your show, but you know what I mean? Like, you start realizing, wow, like, whether I like it or not, this is kind of how I'm perceived.
Yeah.
And thankfully, I think, I would assume you'd say the same thing. You're probably proud of why you are, and that's why it's been so successful.
Absolutely.
You know?
98% of the time, I love
that's
it.
Your, yeah, exactly.
Then I get the itch, and you don't want to throw away the whole arm for an itch.
Right.
And there are times where I go, you know what? It's just itch. Don't cut off the arm.
That's right.
Scratch it.
That's right.
And I could scratch it before that segment or after that segment, but just give the people what they want because they want you, and that's what you've given them.
Yeah.
And so, for me, that's when you talk about that, I go, oh, yeah, I experience that all the time.
Yeah.
Just on a different plane. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you talk about so you're doing comedy now, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you're ever going to be known as Dave Barnes, comedian and artist. Like, I'm never going to be known as Bobby Bones, the comedian and radio host. It's just never going to happen. I can be fantastic.
Right.
I'm always going to be radio host first.
Right.
And then other things. I wrote a New York Times number one best-selling book, and nobody gives a crap. No one goes, author. No one, not one person has ever said, oh, you're the author.
Right.
Never.
Right.
And they always go, oh, you're the DJ. Which, by the way, DJ, to me, I feel like that's insulting to Deadmau5. He's a real DJ. I feel like he's getting pissed off with the mouse head going, oh, come on, I'm a DJ. That guy talks. So, yeah, it's a
we're always going to be who we are, but we can explore these other areas.
Yeah.
And you can go tell jokes.
Right.
And I can go tell jokes. Right. And we can be successful at them, but we're never going to be known as, except for what we're known as. Yeah. But you can be the new comedy guy.
Yeah.
But you don't look like some decrepit old... If you're listening to this and you don't know what Dave Barnes looks like, you think he looks like... On Family Guy, I guess you're going to bring me some rice pudding. That's not you.
Yeah.
You're still, you can be a young comedian.
Yeah.
At 40 years old.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And listen, I'm thrilled. I couldn't be more happy with the life that I've got, and I feel so blessed. So thankfully,
but no one's claiming you aren't.
Yeah.
And I understand what that's like to go, oh, this stuff's not going right. There are always going to be things that aren't going right. It doesn't mean we don't love what we have.
No, that's the truth.
I get so upset at times. But I would never change.
No.
I hate waking up at 3 in the morning. And if I complain about that one more time, I think everybody's head may explode around me because it's like, Bobby's complaining again.
Yeah.
Still, I love what I do.
Well, you know the other thing too, and this is the other thing that I think I've had to learn, is I don't know what it's like to have the things that I want to have. And I think that was a real lesson for me. Honestly, I feel like the Lord really told me, was like, look, you know you can handle what you got, right? And I was like, yeah, I think so. And he's like, but you know what you don't know is if you can handle all this stuff that you're so mad you don't have. So maybe trust me a little more that I know it's good for you and I know what you can handle. And that was a huge moment for me because I think it's so easy to see these moments or these people or just whatever. And it's so stupid because I don't need all that stuff. I just think my insecurity was like, I just like to have a little more success or something. And he's like, well, do you know what that's like? And I'm like, no. And he's like, well, then be careful. And that was one of the best things. I'll never forget. I had a conversation with Natalie Hemby. This was one of the most profound things I've ever been told. We were doing a round. This is right when Pontoon was happening. And I was like, God, congrats on everything that's happening. And she was like, oh, thank you so much. And I said, how's it going? You know, Natalie, she was like, you really want to know? And I was like, yeah. She said, I've never been so in my head about anything in my life. And I was like, why? She said, because nobody warned me about success. And I felt like literally the Lord had taken up and he was like, Dave, are you listening? It's now God. It's not Natalie anymore. And I was like, but it was just like, that was a profound moment for me. And I think that's really true. And I think that's what we all got to be careful about, this thing where we chase these things. Because if you're not careful, one, you forget the stuff you got, which is such a blessing. I mean, look at what you're doing. It's incredible. I mean, there's bajillions of people that are listening to you talk on the radio. But if you're not careful, you can get in this season where you're like, yeah, but you know what? I need a brilliant in one. I need that extra market. Give me that market. You know what I mean? All of a sudden, it's like you can't enjoy these huge blessings you have.
So I struggle with that.
It's hard.
I struggle with that a lot.
It's tough. And so for me, I think it's going, no, I'm thankful for what I have. And you always want a little more than you have. But how do I live a life that I can be a great dad, I can be a great husband, I can do my artistry, I can do this comedy, and do it in ways that are sustainable, that I'm not going to kill myself being gone a million days a year, but also do it enough where I get to work and, you know, flex these muscles I have to do this stuff, you know?
Well, I hope everybody checks out the record. It is a really fantastic record. Who knew it would be so hard just to be myself? And that's long. A lot of words. I admire that, though. The same reason I wanted to put the whole front page on the book of my cover. I wanted it to be called All of That. That was even part of my gag, too, about the book was, what's the title of it? Well, it's every word on the front page. You don't think that's interesting? And they're like, they're like, it's interesting.
It's just called Et Cetera.
Yeah, we just think it's too much. It'd be hard to explain. I'm like, that's the beauty of it.
Yeah, that's right.
You have to talk about it every single time. I hope you listen to the record, check it out. All I can ask is that you expose yourself to it. I love it. If you're going to start with one, I'd start with Chasing Dreams.
All these fears Dave Barnes, the best of
this guy. You know, just full disclosure, what will happen is I don't feel like I deserve a lot of the things that are offered to me in the artist world. Because artists will come up and I think they go, man, I kind of like Bobby. He's not a good songwriter, but he's pleasant to be around. Mm-hmm. He's semi-knowledgeable in music. Mm-hmm. And they go, they'll leave and go, hey, if you ever want to write something, I never, ever do that because I don't feel like I deserve to be in the rooms.
Yeah,
I'll call friends sometimes because I don't write normal music. I write stupid stuff. Mm-hmm. So I don't feel like they should waste their time. It's stupid stuff because that's not their thing and their passion. What I think would be cool, I think you should come in one weekend you're not – like we're on the road, you should come out on the road with me.
Oh my gosh.
And do a couple shows.
That would be so
I can't
much
give you an hour, but we can get up and play some songs.
Oh, yeah.
And we can, I mean, I mean, I would love that.
That would be so much fun.
I would love, and I know it's not cool. It's not Lucy Silva's. It's not somebody who's super talented. I think you're funnier and better at music than me. And so I look forward to the challenge. But that would be, for me, that I like to look at dates and see if.
That would be so. I would love that.
Yeah. I would love that too. And I would be completely threatened and insecure. And that's when I'm often the best.
You'd be tuning perfect the whole weekend. I'll never crush it so much.
We should write funny songs. Because you do that, I don't feel weird about that.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, Nicole Guyland. Nicole,
oh, yeah.
She left. She's like, hey, let's write. I wouldn't do that to her because her thing's not being odd.
Yeah.
Her thing's being awesome.
Quote-unquote.
Yeah. And so she's writing female, and she's writing tequila. She's doing her thing of being awesome.
Yeah.
Her thing's not being awkward.
Yeah, that's right.
I feel like us, we bond over that just a bit. So anyway, I'll probably never follow up, but if you ever go, I like what he said, like, just hit me back.
I would love that.
I would love for you to come on. I think my people would love it.
Oh, yeah, that'd be a blast.
You'd crush it, and then I would just be so destroyed by you dominating and taking my crowd that I would have to get better, because I believe you only get better by seeing people that are better than you at what you do.
Oh, man, that would
be so fun. I've enjoyed this a lot.
Dude, and you know what? For what it's worth, I thought about this when I was coming in today. I'm so thankful for what you do, especially for the songwriting community here, because I think it really is, it's such a, I mean, the talent of people in this town that you know so well, you've interviewed so many of them. I listen to it all the time. I love this podcast. I was thrilled that I was going to be on it. So thank you for having
me. Thank you.
But I love that you do that because it's so funny to hear, you know, to hear artists talk about it because you're used to that. But I've these are some of my best friends, and I'm learning so many things about them I didn't know. And so I'm glad, I'm so thankful you do this, because I think it gives a voice to people who really kind of are the voices without people knowing it, to so many of these songs that are, you know, cherished, sort of timeless songs that matter so much to people, and you have them in to kind of give them a chance to talk about it.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
One of the fun moments for me was, you know, and in town, Shane McAnally is kind of running the songwriting community right now. He's writing everything. He's the king dingling of Nashville. And so we did the podcast, and he was out because he had started Monument Records.
Yeah.
And he was out with Walker Hayes, who was opening for me. And we were in Boston. Yeah. And Shane had done my podcast like 2 weeks before. And he walks out to the lobby, and they're like, Shane McAnally. And he goes, dude, people recognize me from your podcast. This is legit. And I was like, that's awesome, because really,
yeah,
people didn't know Shane or what he did, unless you're so into the weeds.
Yeah, yeah.
But I also enjoy bringing something awesome to my people.
It was just the talent. You know this. It is so talented.
It's so talented. I could endlessly do this for years and years and years, and bring someone into my house. It's awesome every time.
Yep.
So, but I'm just a huge fan of yours, and it just started with me going. The record came out, and there's a listener of mine, Steph, who is a huge fan of yours, who was like, you should bring in Dave. And I don't want to tell her I was bringing you in. She's like, you bring in Dave Barnes. She's tweeting me all the time. And so she's going to flip out whenever
Do you know who I'm talking about? Yeah.
So she's going to flip out whenever she hears this. But I'm a big fan. I think the record is fantastic.
Thank you so much. I hope that really does mean a lot.
If you're listening out there, you check it out. And Dave Barnes, this has been a fantastic, fantastic one. Mike, did you enjoy this?
It was awesome, man.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't say this, but it's my favorite one. I'm going to end everyone for now on.
I just want to be Dave Haywood. That's all I'm trying to do.
That Dave one, I felt like Dave and I could be best friends after he left. I was like, huh. You know how, because he's way smarter than I am.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I go, man, if I just hung around him, I'd be smarter,
too. Oh, yeah,
too.
No, that's what I'm trying to do.
When Dave Haywood said to me, you know, I don't remember what it was like not to be good at playing music. I was like, oh, man, I've never had that in anything in my whole life. Like, I don't even understand that you didn't understand.
That's
like,
right.
It's just.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Dave Barnes, good to see you, bud.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, that's it. Episode something. I don't know. We're in the hundreds now on the Bobbycast. And we'll see you next time, everybody.